It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Every single woman who meets him instantly wants to sleep with him or they're flirting with him.
Hello there, film lovers. Happy New Year, and welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org, also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi. No trolling today, folks. We've done enough. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which I guess you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard, the man who picked the Joe Shearer intro because he's a member of the IFJA, not in studio. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello.
You got your number 80 jersey on.
That's right.
That will bring good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to play?
Yes, we are ready. Conditions are right for Colts football. It's going to be 72 and dry.
So Colts weather.
Indoor, yeah, Colts weather.
I see. That's great.
Yeah.
You have your tickets?
No.
Oh, so you're the one that was causing the blackout issue until was it Marsh or Meyer?
Meyer. Yes.
Meyer bought.
I was causing it.
You personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some fan you are.
I know.
How dare you not spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Lou, you wanted to interject.
Even before the guest intro, he wants to chime in. Yes,
I'm
Lou?
Sorry, I was confused. I thought the 80 on your shirt was a reference to the last time anyone cared about an Eric Robinson.
Wow. You know what? I'm going to hit you with my copy of the Pope at Greenwich Village and Runaway Train. All right. Now that we've...
Free if you can find it.
They're in my basement. Which apparently we all hang out at when we're not on social media. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Everybody hangs out in Matt's basement?
Nobody
wow.
does. Nobody
the Pope
hangs
is
out
in your basement?
Do I just skip the intros and just go right into it? Let's see. We have...
Hey, everyone, Richard Probst is here.
We have Richard yes! Probst is here from The Independent Critic. We have from the Indiana Business Journal, Lou Harry. From Nouveau News Weekly, Ed Johnsonat and Zardoz Fam. And from the Film Yap and Indie Style, Chris Lloyd.
I'm here, but we were not trollers today. We were the trolleed.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Trolleed?
You have to, no, it's, if we bring it up, it just encourages it. Yeah. So you learn to not get in, you pick your Twitter battles, which really you shouldn't have any. So there's that. The other, it was funny, I owe some of you guys an apology because I thought, some of you guys thought you were coming in to talk about New Paranormal Activity. No. No, no, it takes five of us to break down that film, and Kobe. But
I didn't see it.
Did anyone go see it?
It's a very deep film.
Not screened for the press, right?
No.
Today that someone might have rushed out to see it for the show.
You see, that's why we miss Gina, because she would have done that for us.
Yeah, she would have. She would have just came in like 10 minutes ago. She would have hit.
She and Dan and their flavored popcorn toppings mm-hmm. and their procedures.
I was at their theater of choice in the last couple weeks.
Oh,
and
you
thought,
were.
Oh, this is where Gina and Dan used to go with their flavored.
With their.
Remember when we had a girl in the group?
Yeah. There's a girl in the band, guys.
That was our Darla.
So we're the He-Man Woman Haters Club now. That's great.
But they did have Thursday night showings, just like regular showings of Paranormal, which Nick Rogers went to.
Really?
And we have a review up on the phone. Yeah.
Well, first
show
plug
off.
Of the show. That's good.
Yeah. Not the last.
No, definitely will not be the last. I assure you of that. But a couple of reasons why I have the All-Star team on. It's a regular murderer's row for you Yankee fans. If you're a Yankee fan, go away. Couple of things. First off, it's the first Friday in January. Therefore, this is Film Sociology's 5th anniversary.
Hey!
Wow.
Thank
you. Thank you. Ed, you were at the very first show, I always remember. Mm-hmm. We talked about Frost Nixon and anything else that filled up 50 minutes of airtime.
Yes.
So,
and you had those really, really, really long clips from the movies.
And I said, you're not going to keep doing that, are you? And I'm glad you probably didn't.
Not when you're here, of course. but now we have Mr. Slagle breaking them down like analysis.
Plot point.
Yeah, plot point. Guitar
riff.
That's right. Catchphrase. Counter catchphrase. Things like that. So, but also, I tend to do my best and worst of the year around this time because I know everybody needs to do. I mean, some of you guys have deadlines and lives, and
so
you try to get done.
Until the year is over before you discuss the best films of the previous year?
Yes, I do.
That's sick.
I know.
That's Oscar-like.
And yet you're here to help out, so that's lovely.
Attention.
I was going to say, the best foreign language Oscar-nominated films for last year will arrive here somewhere around in July.
March. Yeah, exactly. So
on home video.
But I guess, first off, since it's been... Probably, I think we met what 2-3 weeks ago. We had our we got around the film cauldron that is the IFJA and
AKA Matt's basement.
We did not have it in our basement. We had it at a very nice movie theater and grill on the west side of town.
I know what one you're talking about.
Yes,
now.
And if they underwrote us, we would say. But but I guess since that meeting, I'm curious if anybody's best or worst of the year list has changed. We'll start with Chris.
You mean since then?
Since then. Or since you published your list.
Yes. In fact, I think I put something on social media a couple days ago that I've amended my list twice since then.
Wow.
Not for the actual top 10 list, but the also-rans of, you know, I always do that thing where I list, here are the other movies I saw and really liked this year. And I added two more that I had not yet seen to that list, which were Lone Survivor and someone help me out. What was the other one I added?
We don't know.
There was another one I added.
Grown Ups 2.
It was Before Midnight, which I had seen and just neglected to put on there.
Okay. So, yeah, so did Lone Survivor get the New York, L.A., Chicago treatment?
It comes out next Friday.
The qualifying run, yeah.
Yeah, but it will come to Indianapolis next week because that's just how it is. Ed?
I would bump The Wolf of Wall Street from number 3 to number 2 if I was doing it now. And I added American Hustle onto my list so that Lou and I would have something in common. And just to make that more contentious, I would have bumped Wolf of Wall Street from 78th to 79th. And considered adding Lone Survivor into the mix. That was
all right,
very...
That's it. American Hustle's coming off the list.
Wow.
Lone Survivor was quite the experience.
Okay.
It was a bad experience. Yes.
You're just doing that.
I'm just doing that to fight with Lou.
My feeling is
I enjoy fighting with Lou.
If Saving Private Ryan, it makes Saving Private Ryan seem kind of like on the town.
That's true.
You know,
that is true.
Nice comparison.
So, Richard, what did you hate this year?
Why would you assume that I would hate anything?
Shall we play Richard's intro while we have him here?
See, I should
have. Not
had
everybody
that
has intros, but Richard's is by far the most offensive.
Oh man, see, you're gonna have to get. I gotta find this thing.
Really?
You keep saying that like I'm supposed to be offended by it.
But you love it.
I love it.
You're its biggest fan. It's your intro.
I don't think it goes far enough.
No, it doesn't. But it's not the longest. That's Brian G. Hart's. Of course,
really?
His Hans Zimmer. He's a card-carrying president of the Indianapolis chapter of the Hans Zimmer fan club.
All right, here we go. I got it.
Okay. It's me, dear friends, alive and kicking. Well, alive anyway.
I'll be kicking you with my jingle bells.
That's it. Kick the footless man.
You know, you walk into this stuff.
Yes! Awesome!
Well, when a fella comes back from the dead, I find that an occasion to stand up, be counted.
It's
not
hard.
A film sociology
it's
if
not
I
hard.
Don't do a foot joke.
Well, I can see where it'd be difficult for a man of your stature to keep in touch with even half the people you know. Well, you know beautiful women, they encourage you 1 minute, cut the legs out from under you the next.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
Wow. Why is it that the guy in the wheelchair gets a film called The Sitter?
Wow.
What?
I'm just proud that you dodged a You'll Never Walk Alone reference.
I'm surprised the show hasn't been pushed to 2 a.m., so.
Wow. These boots are made.
So I think what's next, Kobe, is that Richard has an intro that's longer than our highlight reel normally. Like last year's was 45 minutes, so I guess also asking, because I know Lou has paperwork, Ed has Nuvo. Do you guys have your best and worst committed to memory or not?
I've got it.
Okay, you got it, Chris?
Cheat sheet.
Very good. So, okay. I guess I'll start since I'm the host and I need all the attention because it's the last.
Attention.
Number 10, and I'm glad you guys brought up Before Midnight, probably the date film of the year.
That explains why I didn't like it.
Wait,
it
was what? Before Midnight?
Yes. Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke, Richard Linklater. I'm surprised you and Fair Sweet Bianca have not gone through the Before trilogy. But it's out there.
Two attractive people talk for a couple hours.
Well,
times three.
It's like before something else and then before something else.
And now it's before something else.
Exactly.
So number 9, Mud, a.k.a. the hot streak that is Matthew McConaughey. Number 8, Stories We Tell. Also, the family film of the year, right up there with American Hustle. Number 7, Fruitvale Station, for you folks who...
Really?
Yes, really.
Okay.
You liked it?
Oh, I really liked it.
Not that high?
I haven't seen it on too many top 10 lists.
I think part of it is it got released in August, because I remember I was still fighting that was technically a summer film, because I think that opened, if it wasn't the same week as Pacific Rim, like it was before...
It was mid-August.
So, but technically still, I think if... It's interesting that one gets an earlier release, and I know, like, I think, what, Clooney's film got pushed because it looked like it was going to be a film that was just going to get lost in the shuffle of all the big titles that came out in November, December. Number 6, American Hustle, which we've talked about a little bit, and it was on there even before Lou or Ed showed up. Number 5, Gravity. Number 4, Captain Phillips. Number 3, Nebraska. Number 2, 12 Years a Slave, and I think I was the only one in the Midwest to put it as my number 1 film, All Is Lost.
Wow.
I really, really, if you thought Gravity was too heavy-handed, and you just wanted it about a guy or a person trying to survive, then that's All Is Lost. This was the film that gave me the most white-knuckle moments than any other film, because of course 2013 was the year of surviving things.
It's also
plot
the
things.
Easiest film of the year to make a porno title out of for All Is Lust.
Oh, I don't know. I think 12 Years a Slave, and you don't need to change that. So now that I've offended that group, so.
Wow. Prisoners?
Prisoners also in my basement. So.
How about The Way, Way Back?
Or we just say any title with a little bit of tone of naughty.
Inside Lou and Davis.
Fill a man. Ah.
Oh.
And then, of course, there's my autobiographical title, 20 Feet from Stardom. Chris, your list before we get in trouble.
A lot of carryover from yours to mine. Number 10, Nebraska. Number 9, Mud, which I think you also had number 9.
Yep, number 9.
Number 8, Gravity. Number 7, All Is Lost. And I kind of put those two movies together. It's the year of movies about that were, you know, You Are There filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, Dallas Buyers Club. Number 5, Rush. A wonderful racing movie that's not really a racing movie. 4, Pacific Rim, the film that entertained me the most this year.
Our favorite summer film.
Yeah. The Wolf of Wall Street at number 3. As I put it, an untidy film that often flirts with brilliance. Number 2, Prisoners. And number 1, Her.
Which we'll get to Her in a little bit. So, Ed?
Number 10, The Way, Way Back. Number 9, White House Down. I moved it up.
Do you put it on there?
Uh-huh. Number 8, Mud. 7, Gravity. 6, Captain Phillips. 5, The Act of Killing. 4, Dallas Buyers Club. 3, 12 Years a Slave. 2, The Wolf of Wall Street. And number 1, Her.
All right. Lou?
I had to do them a little differently because I didn't have total standout, this is my favorite film of the year ranking. So what I did was my second 5 and my top 5.
Fair enough.
Second 5, in no particular order, Stories We Tell, Philomena, Enough Said, Captain Phillips, and Blue is the Warmest Color, but I would probably try to bump out one of them for Lone Survivor at this point.
All right.
And top 5 were Frozen, American Hustle, Frances Ha, 12 Years a Slave, and Inside Llewyn Davis.
Okay. Richard?
That's really boring.
Borat.
Just because there's no Pacific Rim or White House down. We call
his really exciting interrelated characters bouncing off each other, not sure where you're going in the next scene. That's my kind of movie.
Meditative cinema.
Go ahead, genius.
I love messing.
This is the one with the intro, by the way.
I was going to say, don't you have Spring Breakers on your list?
Yeah.
It got bumped, actually.
If you're driving in your car right now and listening to this, we're as confused in the room about all these references as you are.
Okay, number 10, The Spectacular Now. Number 9, Only Lovers Left Alive, which is a Jim Jarmusch film. Number 8, American Hustle. Number 7, You're Next. Number 6.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, Mr. Shabazz wants to talk to you.
Is that the dinosaur movie? No, that's We're Back. I'm sorry.
That's We're Back. That's
oh,
a
man, that's
different
bad.
Era.
Number 6, I still don't know how to say it. Wajda?
Oh, Saudi Arabia film.
Yeah. Number 5, Upstream Color. Number 4, 12 Years a Slave. Number 3, Francis Ha. Number 2, The Wolf of Wall Street. And number 1, Her.
Okay.
A lot of differing opinions here.
That's just what makes the.
You should try coming to our meetings.
Why don't we just like attack some of each other's choices? Like,
I think I already right. did.
I think
Chris,
Richard already threw the first spear.
I'll start with Francis Ha, which I think I turned up on a couple other of our IFJ members' lists as well. Which it reminded me very much of the HBO show Girls, of which I watched the first 5 episodes of which and decided I didn't need any more of my time wasted. That's kind of the way I felt about that film as well, even though it was well-crafted and well-acted by Greta Gerwig. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Correct.
Yep.
I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like, what does this all really add up to? I'm not too sure. Much the same way I felt about Inside Llewyn Davis. It's like, when the filmmakers went in, what was their intention? What was their guiding principle? What was their burning reason why this movie had to be made. I still didn't see it.
Because it's a folk singer and his cat.
And yet you have Pacific Rim on your list.
Nice. Yeah.
Speaking of double entendre porn titles, by the way.
Yeah, that was wrong. You understand why the Pacific Rim, though. I mean, it's very clear why they made that movie.
Yes,
I know
money.
What you're saying about Llewyn Davis, though.
But
wait.
Go to any art museum and you're not going to see... I'm not comparing these to Van Gogh, but I'm saying that creating something artistic, something wonderful, something compelling, there doesn't have to be a, this is the reason I made it. A truly True. Creative person, I believe, goes into it not knowing where they're going.
Are you talking about Pacific Rim?
Exactly. No, I'm talking about, you know, Francis Ha and Inside Llewyn Davis and ones that are more complicated than and complex in terms of their characters. Not confusing and not difficult, but have more, they aren't cookie-cutter characters. They have, a more interesting inner life. To the point where I'm more engaged in wanting to know what happens to them more than I am in many other films.
You see, with Francis Ha and with the cast of Girls, I don't want to know what happened to those people. The way I felt about it was, you know, not only like, you know, like, it literally was, because I realized that's a show, the TV show is about young people talking about their lives. Greta Francis Ha, which I believe Greta Gerwig, didn't she co-write
yes.
that with Noah Baumbach?
Yes.
She's a little bit older than that demographic, but still about the same. It was just chronicling lives that are unworthy of being chronicled is basically what I felt.
Then don't read Ulysses.
Oh.
One of the things, Francis Ha was one of the most surprisingly positive movie experiences for me this year because I'd seen dozens of bad movies like that. And I've never liked Greta Gerwig in another movie. And I didn't even go in knowing that she co-wrote it. I didn't know any of the backstory. I went in knowing that it was about a woman kind of couch surfing in New York and trying to pull her life together. That's about all I knew. And it kept me surprised and engaged. And, you know, and it never made me have to like her, which I really respected in a movie.
I thought it did.
Llewyn Davis, right? Yes.
Did you? And I mean, I gave Llewyn Davis a very good review, and it was on my list until I bumped it for White House Down. Did you come out of Llewyn Davis wondering why, out of the various stories and various time periods, why the Coen brothers picked that one and that time?
That's another one that surprised me when I was there because I went into it. I mean, I'm very interested in folk music in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I've been following for a long time and trying to piece things together, and I'm a Phil Oakes nut and all of that, and it was completely not the movie I expected, and I really appreciated it.
Okay. It's funny. Lewin Davis made my honorable mention, and I know you. I think you'd brought up before, Ed. You talked about deconstructing the folk scene as far as
deromanticizing the musician.
And
I understood that. I just this was one where I really did. I wondered why did they pick this one? You know, I just would like to hear someone interview them and them say, here's why we thought we'd make this as opposed to. Because, I mean, you could take any number of routes to show bummed out people sabotaging their own lives.
But that also assumes that there's a goal in, I'm going to make a movie about blank, rather than, I'm going to start with this character and explore and see where it goes and then hone it and then shape it. But, no, to me, it's not a statement about this issue. Or it's not, here's the period. It's an intriguing character who's at war with himself. And it gets at a part of the creative process that I've very rarely, if ever, seen in films. That day-to-day trying to get yourself to be your better self.
Well, Ed, you interviewed the lead, which you should check out at Nuvo.net. I think it's still in the archives. What did he say?
He didn't know.
He didn't ask?
He was the Coen brothers. Right. Star of the Coen brothers.
Right.
But, I mean, basically what he... He had the same reaction I had, which was he saw it with the crowd and laughed and was really rolling. Then he took a bunch of his buddies to a private screening they arranged, and when he walked out, they were all completely bummed out. You know, it's that kind of a film. That black comedy, unless you have other people to reinforce that it's a comedy, it doesn't feel so funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and no, he didn't know what drew them to the material.
So I know Ed and I were at a press screening of it where there was just like a handful of us. And did you guys see it with bigger crowds? And was curious how that reaction went.
I saw it at a press screening and then I watched it again.
Okay.
Lewin?
Yeah.
I saw Lewin at it was an open screen. It was a full theater.
Right, right.
I've seen it three times and it was in search of, and I don't do this in movies usually, but it was in search of that very thing. And I know what you're talking about. You accept the movie is what it is. But on this one, it was, why did they pick this guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just really puzzled me.
I didn't feel the character had, we're back to Lewin Davis. We started talking about Francis Ha, but somehow we got into Lewin Davis.
New York,
because they're dating now.
Two couch surfing movies.
At least in Francis Ha, I saw the character grow and change a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And there was an interesting journey there. I'm not sure if Lewin Davis grew. I think he was a miserable human being who was completely selfish, both on an emotional level and on an artistic level. And at the end of the movie, he was the same guy who, you know, if he had made it and become famous and hopefully at least rich a little bit.
He would have dumped Joan Baez.
I don't think he would have changed then either. I think he was a guy who was destined to be miserable because he received that which he transmitted in life.
So basically, he could have been Bob Dylan, but he turned out to be Dave Von Rock.
Well, you know, I mean, was he traumatized because of the suicide of his partner? Or, well, I mean, was that a big effect on the behavior we saw exhibited? Or was he just always this way?
Well, and that's an excuse for the behavior,
right?
In some ways.
Right.
That's what I think is intriguing about it. I didn't want all the pieces to fit together.
You guys want to talk about Wolf of Wall Street and why it's 79th?
Yeah, I'm exaggerating.
It's funny. You mentioned that. I'm going to handle this gingerly in social model view, but apparently, according to you, MSN.com, The Wolf of Wall Street broke a record when it came to cinematic F-bombs. It also helps that it's 3 hours, but...
What's an F-bomb?
No, we're not doing that. If you don't know by the time you come on this show... But somebody recorded some, and it's not my grandmother, because she would count the curse words.
Oh, that's funny.
But apparently, according to Wikipedia, a fun source if there was, and this was in a thing, apparently 506 times in 180 minutes. And it's apparently said the previous record, so somebody's on F-bomb detail. Anybody guess the previous?
It's probably another Scorsese film.
Scarface?
Nope. Summer of Sam.
No, that's right.
The Spike Lee, yes, 435, and that's about, I think that's 130 minutes.
In the 90s, or in 1990, in fact, I went back for a second time to see Goodfellas. I was doing reviews on Bob and Tom's show then, and went back to see it the second time to count the F-bombs. I hate saying that.
I know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but It was 200 something, and it was astounding at that time.
According to this, 300, but that's a round figure. That just seems a little weird. And then Casino, 422.
Wow. You know what's amazing to me, though, is I don't remember them. That's how much I was into the film.
I don't either. I don't not Wolf of Wall Street. Think with if you're going to be a broad generalization of New York criminal element, that seems to be more of it.
So Martin Scorsese is building up film by film his the sheer volume of F-bombs.
You should have seen the director's cut of Hugo.
Or Kundun 2 is coming. It's 4 hours long. So, and I think it's funny watching Wolf of Wall Street, and Kobe, you have a contribution in a little bit, but this was a film I think a lot of people have dismissed as Martin Scorsese's Wall Street. But I think it takes the absurdity and the abuse of money and power and takes it to a whole new level. And we're talking about 80s coked out crazy Oliver Stone that he's topping. So I think part of it is that. Part of it is the narration, which he has already done in Goodfellas, which he already did in Casino, but he has a nice twist to it where there are moments where DiCaprio is addressing the camera, going through a technical thing, and then stopping himself and going, yeah, you don't care.
So, the problem is I did.
You did? You really want to know how they fleeced it? It wasn't enough?
Another excess scene.
Now, part of what I enjoyed about the film, for me, it was... In addition to what we were, you know, the story and the way the story was presented, I thought we were also watching a 72-year-old man say, "You want to see me kick the wall down? Because I can still do it. Watch this."
Yep.
And yeah. It was fun. It was satisfying watching Marty go, you know, do another one with a bang.
It's like Kurosawa doing Ron when he was what? I think about this maybe a little older, but yeah, there is something to be said about filmmakers in their 70s and 80s still putting out quality work and putting out bold work.
Bold.
Yeah. What I liked about it was the fact that it is a movie that's all over the map. It's 3 hours long, which I know in of itself puts off a lot of people who might have gone to see it. But, you know, I see a lot of movies that, you know, I say to myself, this movie, you know, didn't decide what it wanted to be. You know, it's trying to be different things at once and it's not succeeding at it. This is a movie that was not indecisive about what it wanted to be. It sort of consciously made a decision to be everything. You know, there are dramatic parts, there are comedic parts, there's a part that's basically like a crime caper, and there's parts towards the end that are quite tragic and sad and hard to watch. And yet each one of those those moments, the movie seemed completely invested in that time, and I enjoyed what it was doing during that time. So it's really sort of a patchwork movie, and yet each patch shines together and shines individually and together.
It's funny because I keep hearing people say, well, it could be 30 minutes shorter. And I keep thinking to myself, I can't think of a 30 minutes that I
Anchorman
wanted.
2 could be 30 minutes shorter.
It could be,
but I can't imagine.
It's a short film wanting to be a feature film.
That's a lot of films that are out there.
That's true.
None that made our list, at least I don't think.
The worst.
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. So, actually, we have a Phoenix Rise. This is a segment we have not had in a while, and I was surprised that this came up. So, ready to contribute. It's been a while. Hit it.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Mr. Slagle.
Yes.
You and your lovely newlywed spouse.
That's right.
You went and saw this.
Mm-hmm.
Your choice or hers?
My choice.
Obviously.
No, obviously. Yes.
And how did you enjoy it, sir?
I liked it. Pretty much just to echo what you said, I mean, it's nothing that you haven't seen before, but I think as you and Ed were talking on No Limits a couple weeks ago, from the opening scene, it's pedal to the floor.
Yes.
An hour in, Bianca leans over, "This is obnoxious." Yeah!
But you know what? DiCaprio's still more entertaining to watch in an obnoxious manner than Emma Thompson
right.
and
but
Saving
it's
Mr. Banks.
It's not. That's what it's supposed to be. You don't go into this expecting
to like the guy.
Yeah.
Or to have a change of heart.
Yeah. No.
These guys were and I've had this discussion with my spouse with the missus about, because I can watch these guys. I can watch DiCaprio and Jonah Hill and all the others doing these horrible things. But you mentioned the film Girls. I felt that way about the Bling Ring. I didn't give two craps about the pretty people in L.A. stealing from other pretty people's homes or a film like that. Or even The Great Gatsby. I'm sorry you have all the money in the world, but you can't have Carey Mulligan. That's too bad. Boo-hoo. But these guys are engaging. These guys are riveting to watch.
I'm completely on the other side of it. I felt like I got the movie in 5 minutes and it didn't take me anywhere different. There were occasionally okay, interesting moments. But even then, I felt like Scorsese was undermining them. The scene with the aunt is the quintessential one where something actually dramatically interesting is happening, and then he undermines it and by having lame voiceovers telling us what we already can see by the actors.
Well, I think
I kind of see that too. Like, you got the movie 5 minutes, you know what was going to happen, but it's something cool to watch.
Did you want to see his character and his aunt? Maybe those were the thrusts they took out to get the NC-17.
No, I don't care if they do or not, but I appreciated the tension in that scene that to me was underlined, italicized, and bolded by adding the voiceover. To me, it was all in there in the performance anyway. Mm-hmm. Are they hitting on each other or not? That was the one moment in the film where I really felt dramatically engaged.
Okay. And if he was going to do it with the FBI agent.
Or that.
Which was one of my favorite scenes.
I would see...
What? Yeah, I love the fact that it starts off as the, you know, it's like a Columbo episode where, you know, yes, they're exchanging pleasantries. They know exactly why the other one is there and they know exactly what they're talking about. And then finally, DiCaprio's character just out of sheer frustration throws lobsters at him.
Right. I mean, I would watch Casino again. I would probably watch Tower Heist again.
Why would you watch Tower Heist again?
I'm just saying, in comparison.
Is that the one? Is that the Eddie Murphy Ocean's
Ben Stiller?
Yes.
That's really, really wants to be Ocean's 11.
One.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Ocean's on a budget.
Also saw, let's see, Saving Mr. Banks.
Mm-hmm. Guess what? She hated the movie. Sorry.
Let's see. American Hustle. Saw Richard at the screening of American Hustle. That was cool.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Don't put metal in the science oven.
No. Loved it.
Never. If anything else, if you learned anything from American Hustle, just never put metal in the science oven.
No, I went home and did that just to defy it.
Really?
I did.
Did Jennifer Lawrence
she
come
was
and
right.
douse it?
But that to me, in comparison, and we happen to see both of them on the same day, many of us.
Yeah, that's a fun 5 hours.
But to me, it didn't drain any of the energy from American Hustle. And there was a movie where in just about every scene, I didn't know where they were going to take it. I didn't know what was going to happen, but it was always true to character. And I bought it and loved the fact that I didn't know if a scene was going to turn tragic, comedic, absurd.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know where they were going to go. And I'm from Jersey. I've bought every second of it.
Yeah, again, it's not something necessarily new, but it's cool. It's cool to watch these people. You like Christian. You like these people. You know these people. You're okay spending 2 hours with them.
And any pair of them in the room, there was an interesting dynamic because characters impacted each other's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And how somebody behaved in a room depended on who else was in there, and that to me was...
This is interesting because what you said about Wolf of Wall Street a minute ago, I felt the same thing about American Hustle. Right at the beginning, it was, you know, we opened up with Christian Bale opening his shirt so you can see that he gained weight for the movie, and here's my big belly, and now let's do the comb over for the next 10 minutes, and let's make sure everybody's a complete cartoon and we completely understand what everyone's doing, and then we'll mix it. I mean, it felt like the same thing where they just... underlined and in boldface and it put off.
Yeah, the best description of American Hustle I've heard is from my fellow yapper Nick Rogers, who said it's a 70s aesthetic in search of a movie. Is this the details and the clothes and the hair and all that kind of stuff and the crazy, you know,
hair,
you know, the love, not triangle but quadrangle, you know, that was all the stuff that seemed to be what the movie's energy was all focused on rather than the actual story, which, you know, the story behind this movie is that, you know, the screenplay had languished in Hollywood for years as one of those turning up on the blacklist, which is a list that goes around every year of someone's opinions of the best unproduced screenplays, and it had been on there for years and years. And David O. Russell came along and said, well, this isn't neat. You know, the guy took the Abscam scandal and showed you details you probably didn't know before. And David O. Russell took the thing and said, well, this is an interesting basis, but I'm going to deliberately rewrite this using my own vision to make the people into caricatures, his own words, to make them caricatures. And that's what you got. You got a very cartoony, caricature-esque story with all these people, you know, with the hair and the clothes. And the characters just made no sense to me. I mean, did you ever feel like the Christian Bale character, I mean, really had an interior there that was moving him along? I just saw an exterior performance.
It was because they ruined his dad's business.
Yeah. The only performer in that I really thought really got traction was Jennifer Lawrence. In a role that makes absolutely no sense in terms of the narrative. She's just there to create chaos and everyone else bounce off of her. But she was just so vibrant in it that I loved her.
I disagree completely. I think all of them had an actual really interesting inner life, which is what I talked about before, where in almost every scene I was going in, I didn't need Scorsese voiceovers. I could go into the head of those characters and trying to figure out what they needed to do to get what they wanted, but also deal with the other dynamics of the other characters in all those scenes.
But there was voiceover in Hustle.
You see, I don't even remember it.
I don't either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Amy Adams describing this elaborate comb-over. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Bale, of course, because we wish all women looked like Amy. Well, for most of us, we wish that all women who got Duke Ellington looked like Amy Adams, at least in the 70s pool scene. But no, there's a little bit. Not nearly as much as Wolf of Wall Street, but there is some. Mm. So maybe it's like a score where if the voiceover doesn't bother you, then and you didn't notice. So. Nice. And best use of ELO ever in the existence. Seriously, that's so kudos to Russell for that. Any other films from your list, from your best list, that anybody wants the champion? What I liked that on your list is, if you read it at Nuvo.net, is you give it a status update. Is it still in theaters? Is it on DVD? When is it open? That sort of thing. Because somebody's I know some of them have fallen by the wayside, and hopefully we'll get picked up some more.
Not discussed as much. I'd like to kick Frozen into the conversation, because if you look at Princess and the Frog, Tangled, Frozen, I think Disney sort of traditional musicals are on an incredible hot streak, and you compare that to what the Pixar side has been doing lately, and I don't think enough credit's being given to the Disney musical folks.
It was really smart that you had the gang that did Book of Mormon doing the music, and that you got Idina Menzel, one of the best voices in the business, as opposed to hiring celebrities that everybody knows, even though there's Kristen Bell and Kieran Hines, which was nice. And I think of what Frozen works in every single aspect of it. The princess or queen story, the love triangle, I guess that's safe to say, the comedic sidekick, the animal comedic sidekick, the look of it, and the music.
And the forward motion, and you don't feel like you've seen that story that way before, because the Snow Queen isn't that familiar of a story to us.
And they completely changed the old legend around. It's not great.
But even
do you really want Disney to take care of Hans Christian Andersen?
Well, the Hans Christian Andersen, I know this because I actually received in the mail a DVD of The Snow Queen. Somebody made that, I think, just to ride the coattails of Frozen. And it's a much, much different story, much darker, much
more.
Frozen is wonderful, and I agree. The Disney musicals have been on a rise lately, strangely corresponding to when Pixar and Disney joined forces under what's the head guy's name?
John Lasseter.
John Lasseter. He's now controlled, and it seems like he's paying more attention to the Disney films than the Pixar ones. Because I remember Pixar had never done a sequel, and then it seems like lately all they're doing is sequels.
Right. We're still waiting for one of the Disney parks to put in an ice show for Frozen. We're sure that's
coming. Oh yeah, Broadway will come.
And the one Pixar movie they should make a sequel to, The Incredibles, they're not planning on, which.
That would seem the one that would lend itself most to further adventures.
Yeah.
Incredibles 2, still incredible.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about the year of Matthew McConaughey? He was in three of my movies on my top 10 list.
I want to mention, because I guess the one film that I think began the turnaround, and it's still one I still need to rent, is The Lincoln Lawyer. But like, Bernie, Killer Joe, Magic Mike, he's almost the best thing in all of those. And then Dallas Buyers Club, Mud, and in the first 10 minutes, he's got one off-the-bench, half-court, three-point shot in Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to interview him. I generally don't like to do celebrity interviews because they're pains in the ass and they're so coached and it's just not fun. But I would love to interview him just to see if I could get something out of him to see, like, what happened to him. And I can only think at some point he said, okay, I'm 40 years old now. I've made all the money in the world that I could ever possibly spend. you know, why don't I just start making movies that I would want to see and forget about all the Hollywood stuff? That's the only thing I can think would be his motivation. Because
he's in GQ or Esquire, and a long interview with him in the current issue, and discusses exactly that.
I'm psychic. I'm F-wording psychic.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I want to say something about her.
Please, Ed.
It opens next Friday, and you'll be hearing, you know, great reviews from Chris and me and several other people, Richard and some others. I want people to lower their expectations for her. This is a film you're going to see a five-star review for me for the first time in 3 years.
Ooh.
You're going to, you know, it was real high on our list. You're going to have the people that love this film are really gushing about it, and I'll be one of them. But I'm also going to qualify that with, don't go in expecting the moon and the stars. The movie works because it's guileless. It's not trying to be hipper than thou. It's not trying to blow you away. You know, it's honest and clear, as clear as people get. And it's hopeful in a non-greeting card way. It's just extreme. It's what you wanted a movie, but not beating you over the head with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just so effective, but it's not going to just dazzle you like a blockbuster.
No.
You know, and you need to know that and remember that when you walk in, so you don't let the praise have you, you know, with unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, I think if you put out the pitch on paper, there's going to be some that might go ew a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, it's Spike Jonze.
Yeah,
and, you know, so I'm gonna get on a high horse. If you haven't seen Being John Malkovich adaptation or Where the Wild Things Are, then you know, good luck, because that's the type of project, from what it sounds like, that this is.
Okay, yes. I'm going to make a bold prediction. I don't think Her is going to do very well at the box office. I don't think it's going to be even a modest hit. I think it's going to get overlooked at the Oscars. It might get a few nominations. Maybe Joaquin Phoenix might possibly get Best Picture.
Has the award people forgiven him?
Probably not. Joaquin Phoenix, no.
Best Picture nod?
It probably will, just because it's been getting so much attention from regional critic groups, and they can do up to 10, so it can sort of get thrown in there. It's just because it's like people hear this thing, it's a movie about a guy who falls in love with his computer.
And it's not.
It's But 95% of the people are going to hear that and tune out.
Yep.
It's the same reason that wonderful movie from a few years ago called 127 Hours... starring
you mean the James Franco saws his arm off film.
Exactly. James Franco in the best performance of his career, absolutely amazing, and absolutely died a horrid death at the box office because no one wanted to go see it. And I'm predicting, and I'm afraid that's what's going to happen to Her.
Richard, is he right on that? Is he 127 Hours is better than Spring Breakers as far as Franco?
Oh, that's pretty cold.
Okay.
I don't know. No. I don't know about that dude. No, yeah, I agree, obviously.
And Her is not a movie about a guy who falls in love with his computer. Her is a movie about interpersonal relationships. It's got its eye firmly on where we are now in our interpersonal relationships, but it also could be timeless at the same time, you know, equally. I mean, it's about relationships.
It's a movie about loneliness. It's a movie about... It's not about a sci-fi movie, but it's a movie about technology and how we think technology is helping us to stay closer together, and in fact, it's separating us.
And there's a computer operator. If you hear anyone say, well, it's just like he falls in love with Siri. No, he falls in love with a self-aware individual who grows and learns from their experiences. It's about two people, the relationship between two people.
Is that Scarlett?
The muffins are done.
Great timing. That was
a center aisle special.
And we already had the relationship with Siri. That was an episode of Big Bang Theory, and that was 22 minutes, and we've moved on. So
Electric Dreams was how many years ago?
You know, it's a name drop. I got to meet Virginia Madsen a few years back, and she's been trying to do a remake of that. She said she owns the rights to it, I think. So fingers crossed on that. But yeah, I think I would take Scarlett Johansson's voice over Bud Cort any day on that one.
I have a question.
Dave, yes, Kobe has a question.
Yes, like to address this to you, Matthew Soucy, and to you, Ed Johnsonot.
Uh-oh.
A film that is on Ed's list and that I am yet to see but would like to see because I hear some good things from both of you and some friends, White House Down. Matthew, I remember when you talked about this, you said it is big, dumb, fun.
Mm-hmm. And Ed finds it bigger, dumber, and funner than more fun.
Yeah.
than I. That's another thing that's a half hour too long.
But it did not make your list because
No. Part of it is there, and I guess I don't want to do a spoiler alert on a film that's now out on DVD and Blu-ray, but there's
the White House Goes Down.
Yeah, I know. There is that. But by the way, it really shouldn't be a surprise if you cast James Woods that there's going to be a potential turnaround, and then there's another Academy Award nominated actor who, because of his presence, adds another 20 minutes to the film. And there's, because you thought James Woods becoming a bad guy was a big twist, there's another one involving an actor that I think we all universally like very much. And I hope he got a huge check for this. But that, I didn't need that. I think if it was more of Jamie and Channing blowing up the White House lawn, then I'd have been fine with it. But there is enough of that. This is the film that Olympus Has Fallen wanted to be.
It's Roland Emmerich is the director. I interviewed him once, and I've been around toasters that were more interesting and smarter than Roland Emmerich.
Well,
but he knows how to, some toasters.
Yeah, some toasters.
The Brave Little Toaster.
The Brave Little Toaster, right.
Not an individual toaster that you're fond of. Just a general toaster. But
what's the voice of your toaster there, Lou Harriet?
Well, it could kick the butt of your science oven.
But, you know, Emmerich is, you know, he did Godzilla, and he'll never be forgiven for that. But he did Independence Day, too, which was idiotic but entertaining. It never would have made a top 10 list or anything. But this thing... As far as big, dumbass action films, this is the biggest with the dumbest ass you've ever seen. It's just so much fun.
Okay.
Know?
So
are you going to rent it?
Yes. Ed, this is your biggest, dumbest, funnest movie, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Matt, is there a bigger, dumber, more fun movie than White House Down?
I wouldn't say it's dumb, but I would put Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim made my honorable mention, and... It is Guillermo del Toro's Valentine to the Japanese monster movies we, not you, Kobe, you're too young, grew up watching on Saturday afternoon television. As I sit on the front porch with my black socks, I've said this from Michael Bay to Roland Emmerich and everybody down. If you're going to have two behemoths beating the daylights out of each other, I want to see it. Mm-hmm. Don't give me extreme close-ups and don't give me, you know, half a second editing. Show me a long shot, two big things. In 1976, it would have been Rick Baker and one of Rick Baker's minions in rubber suits beating the crap out of each other. I want to see that. And Pacific Rim does that. We have intentionally one-dimensional characters. If this was a Michael Bay film, it would have been 45 minutes longer, had a crappy Aerosmith song, and nobody would have cared. But we had – and by the way, Idris Elba, he's going to get nominated for Mandela. They should show his clip where he's imitating Bill Pullman's speech from Independence Day. This film knows exactly what it is, and not enough people saw it. And shame on you, because really, a quality of a movie does not reflect box office, but not enough people saw this. And there were some dumb movies out this summer that way too many people got to see, and not enough people saw Pacific Rim.
It did very well overseas. So
I'm glad, because Del Toro, this is his biggest project to date. I hope he gets more chances to make more Valentines of films that we actually want to see.
Yeah.
Here they greenlighted Pacific Rim 2, Electric Aquatic Boogaloo.
Believe it or not the first Boogaloo joke. That was Andrew Lee, Abdul Kareem Shabazz's old producer. So that's good on that.
We were talking earlier about, you know, movies that know what they are. And I will forever defend, you know, purely entertaining movies that are, you know, big, dumb, and fun and are aware of their own bigness and their own dumbness.
And their own funness.
I also wouldn't call Pacific Rim dumb. It kind of has a dumb premise or a simple premise, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, his brother died.
But it's
he's got to get back. I mean, it's
straightforward.
And guess what? The little female can whoop some tail. Yeah. So. The only thing missing was taking off her helmet and shaking her hair to let us know, it's a female.
Them movie gals is feisty.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is a movie in which you're dealing with, you know, like 200-foot-tall creatures, robots and monsters fighting each other. And, you know, the robot grabs an oil tanker ship and wields it like Casey Jones at the plate. And if you can't, you know, just have your inner 14-year-old just, you know, leap with joy at something like that, then you're just stunted. I'm sorry.
I did the same thing at Spring Breakers.
Yeah, but did Spring Breakers have Ron Perlman? It could have.
In a bikini.
It should have. Yeah.
Well, what did you guys think of the Charlie Day character in Pacific Rim? Did you find the manic scientist
about.
Guy? See, I've watched this movie several times now because my kid...
Was he in something else this year, too?
Not that I know of.
Charlie Day?
Go to IMDb, Mr. Slagle. Right, that's your job.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I enjoyed him, but I heard
but there's, oh, yeah, the kind of scientific, comedic... You know, there's always, I guess, is the for lack of a better comparison, the Bill Paxton in Aliens character, the one guy who's just doesn't want anything to happen. Yeah, he's Shaggy in real life, I guess, is he doesn't want anything to happen, but he actually, unlike Shaggy, actually does things. He does science stuff. You know what it is, Kobe? He does character stuff.
Mm. No,
that's the only project he worked on this
actually,
year.
Actually, he was a voice in Monsters U.
Oh, well, that's nice.
That's exciting.
That's good.
And apparently there's going to be a Horrible Bosses 2.
What does it say? What's in parentheses?
Filming.
Don't care. Filming. You know what? Terry Gilliam's films were filming, and they didn't all get finished, so not really caring. Kobe, while you're at the board, we only have a few minutes left. I know tonight, if nobody has plans, at 7 o'clock at the IMA is their winter film series. It starts tonight, and they are showing the original Thin Man. Myrna Loy, William Powell. So that is, and I think they got 6 or 7 films at the IMA on Friday nights.
Also very fun. Thin Man's one of those where, even though it had, 4 or 5 sequels, and they kept the Thin Man title, you know, the Thin Man isn't the lead character.
Right. It's just Nick and Nora and the dog and lots of booze. So, Kobe, what's happening at your, do you have the list? Do you have the lineup?
I'm getting there.
Winter film series?
Nothing. At Bloomington this week for IU Cinema, but we will return next week, 7 o'clock Friday, January 10th. The Punk Singer,
okay,
2013 documentary, and Saturday, January 11th, mark your calendar, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Network,
excellent, a film more relevant now than it was in 1976.
I think we may have reached a point where Network may be dated.
Yeah, it's dated. Right. Feels like a period piece.
Wow, it's so quaint.
Interesting that 12 Years a Slave was near the top of a lot of our lists and wasn't really mentioned here.
Because everybody's mentioning it.
Yeah, but it's sort of part of, it's interesting that three of the big films that focused on African-American characters, Lee Daniels, The Butler, 42.
I'm sorry, Forrest Gump.
And 12 Years a Slave, all ones that are about a man who isn't allowed to speak, basically.
Well, man, and Mandela.
Is holding back what they are about. Just interesting kind of repressed, not repressed psychologically, but repressed by the world, characters in all of those films. It's kind of like that's a theme going, and the lone survivor, Gravity.
All is lost.
Robert Redford on a boat.
Yep. And Snakes on a Plane.
Generic.
I would prefer Snakes on a Plane.
Snakes on a Boat would be bad, too.
I think that was made for cable, because they immediately, you know, when you have a film that's a hit, you start making knockoffs of it. And
well, we had Tiger on a Boat last year.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. No, 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 no. I'm sorry. Ung Lee's Tiger on a Boat. Thank you very much.
All right, here we go. IMA 2014 Winter Nights film schedule running this weekend, January 3rd through the end of February 28th. Here we go.
Go.
Thin Man. Next week, the 10th, Some Like It Hot from 1959. January 17th, 1964's Father Goose.
Okay.
24th, Manhattan. January 31st, Raising Arizona.
Well, they're really going out on a limb there, aren't they?
Well, they all can't be blue as the warmest color.
And I think the Art Craft has King Creole this month.
Get out. Yeah. Really?
One of those. Either that or, yeah, I think it's King Creole. Might be Viva Las Vegas.
But Elvis, directed by Michael Curtiz.
But being able to see those on the big screen is a
blast. Absolutely.
The Art Craft is a great place to go in case
it is. Okay, we got about a minute or so left.
We got a few minutes.
Do we have a couple minutes?
We
do need a Zardoz screening.
We got like
thank you.
5 minutes.
Do we have five?
We got five.
Biggest disappointments?
Should what?
Go around biggest disappointments?
I love, Ed, I'm going to let you start because you don't do a worst list. No. You have a list that irritates you.
Most annoying.
I mean, that's
most annoying list.
Because the worst movies nobody sees.
No.
I did, and apparently made people mad when I brought it up. But go ahead.
All right, Now You See It or Now You See Me. I forget what the title is, but... If you're going to, you need to have internal logic in your movie, especially if you're about your movie's about magicians trying to get real magic powers later. You can't have magicians that want real magic powers later that show that they have magic powers now. It doesn't work. And I'm the only person apparently on Earth that was bothered by this.
Oh, no. You have a room full, I think.
Oh, good. That's mine.
Okay. All right. Chris?
Probably most disappointing would be Elysium. Which is a movie that
I still have a headache from getting hit over the head of the symbolism of that.
Yeah, I mean, when the movie was starting, like, you know, every year I do, like, a movie year preview.
Wait a minute, was that the not Tom Cruise End of the World one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was the Matt Damon
End. Well, no, not End of the World, but
It was District 9. Yeah. It was from the same director as District 9, and we already got the same symbolism from District 9. Yes, Elysium is Hamilton County, and Earth is downtown. We get it.
I was just disappointed because I'd really been looking forward to it. I thought this is a really cool concept, the idea of the rich people all live up in space and the poor people are down on Earth in the squalor. Kind of for similar reasons in that the film's its own interior logic did not hold up. The whole point is that they have these magic cure boxes up in space that can cure any injury or any disease instantly. But they have a problem is that, needless to say, all the people down on Earth want to get up there to use them, and they don't like all those illegal immigrants, hint, hint, coming there to mess up their nice, pristine space.
So it's about Obamacare.
Yeah, which, of course, begs the question of why don't they just install a few magic cure boxes down on Earth, you know, and, you know, set up a queue.
Get rid of the
so stupid.
The surplus and other Dickensian stuff. So I'm sorry.
Mine was actually an okay movie, but it was my biggest disappointment was Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh.
Because it was okay, but it was incredibly disappointing. It had a surprise that was nobody's surprise. It didn't earn the references to the previous movies. It turned the franchise into a G.I. Joe movie in the last half and was... Yeah, I barely remember most of it.
Braun beat out brains in a Star Trek
really
movie.
Disappointing.
It reminded me of the last episode of the TV show Lost, because like you'd heard all this stuff out there, people like denying or uplifting, you know, like, oh no, like with Lost, it was like, oh, and there's not going to be a purgatory. Last episode, purgatory. Yeah. They called it something else. And the same thing with that. It was like, oh, this is just a remake of Star Trek 2.
Let's hope that the odd-numbered films are the good ones in that series this time.
Great. Uh-oh, Richard?
Yo!
What made you the angriest this year?
You know, I think one of my biggest disappointments, you know, we've talked about how good James Franco can be.
Oh, here we go.
As Oz the Great and Powerful. Yeah. Where he just dunk up the place. What an incredibly disappointing film. He was so miscast in this film.
On my magic journey.
Gorgeous credit sequence. It should get the Oscar for best credit sequence.
And then
gorgeous.
That's it.
Incredible. Yeah. That's
it. By the way, that movie made tons of money, and Jack the Giant Slayer, which came out 2 weeks earlier and was a far superior film,
absolutely.
Died.
Agreed.
Go rent Jack the Giant Slayer. Much better movie.
Much better.
Well, I suffered through movie 43 for this organization, and I shan't ever have to do that again.
Wow.
Go watch Kentucky Fried Movie instead.
Shan't, is that the past tense of...
There's an N in there. Ah, so no. I don't know if it was the worst. It wasn't necessarily the worst movie, but it was the laziest movie, and that's R.I.P.D. Because as I'm watching Jeff Bridges and Ryan Reynolds do a variation of Men in Black, and I realize that the Ryan Reynolds character is killed by his partner, played by Kevin Bacon, I went, oh, they're also ripping off Ghost. So two big movies I got the rip off in one felt swoop, and even Mr. Bridges, who is one of the most optimistic people on Earth, even said it in public, yeah, this film wasn't really good. So there is that. Kobe, do we have some words to live by?
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Ed, is there anything you want to recommend besides Local Hero and Wild in the Streets?
Zardoz, be proud.
We got to organize the screening of that. Guys, thank you so much for once again rehashing the best and worst of the year. Now we're in for a long, long time of Oscar contenders that we already saw and movies that are released in January for a reason. So there. Thanks, guys. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.